Dad, Dad, I help you. Dad, I help you cook. Dad, Dad, Dad. My son loves to cook. And whenever I pull out the pots and pans and the seasonings, he just goes crazy. His favorite part about cooking is shaking the seasonings into the pan. And he doesn't know when to stop, which can be incredibly dangerous. Have you ever taken a bite into your food and just got like a mouthful of pepper? That's how James wants to cook. The reality of it, though, is it would be so much easier if he was not helping. Not having to convince a toddler that we have used enough garlic powder and any more would take out a vampire, or that we actually don't need to use all of the spoons. One is just fine. It would be easier for me to cook by myself. But then I wouldn't get the joy of spending time with my son. We wouldn't be creating something together. The last time we cooked French toast, I remember sitting down and looking across the table and saying, "Look, bud, look what we created together. Look what we made." And he just had this giant smile on his face. And that made all of the struggles worth it. Our text today is Matthew 5, 13 through 16. It's on page 810 of your blue Bibles. We're continuing to look at one of Jesus' most famous teachings, the Sermon on the Mount, found in Matthew 5 through 7, as we are going through the book of Matthew. This teaching was how Jesus introduced his kingdom, what his kingdom would look like. Just a few verses before this, in chapter 4, he makes this statement that the kingdom of heaven is at hand. It's here. It's coming. And then he begins this sermon by focusing on the type of people that his kingdom is coming to. He's saying, okay, here, these are the people whom you can look to see God's kingdom coming into this world. It isn't with the rich or the powerful. It isn't with the religious elite. It's not through the kings. It's through the poor in spirit. It's through the meek. It's through those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. It is through people who feel crushed and defeated. And today we turn to the next section of Jesus' teaching when he talks about what these people are doing in the kingdom. So let's read Matthew 5, 13. "You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven." I love to cook, sometimes with my son and sometimes by myself. I've been cooking for most of my adult life. I got my start in the kitchens of Chipotle, and I made some good food there from scratch. Once upon a time, it was from scratch. And I learned a lot about cooking and how to cook and techniques. And one of the things I learned from my managers was that salt isn't just to make things taste salty. It's like this wonder seasoning that does a lot of different things to our food. One of those things is it actually helps pull out other flavors in your food. It makes things pop. It makes things taste more intense. So if the lemon just isn't quite lemony enough, throw some salt in. Maybe throw some salt in. It's this crazy seasoning that makes things better. And it also is a preservative. Back in ancient times, in Jesus' time, salt acted as a way to preserve the meat from spoiling. It would keep it from rotting. It kept it safe to eat. And so when Jesus uses this image, he's saying that his followers are the salt of the earth. He's inviting them to be salty people who embody the goodness of God in this world. And this isn't something new for God's people. He's pulling this idea from the Old Testament. Salt symbolized faith and preservation, that God's people would be people that the world looked at and saw God's goodness. And if you know the story of the Old Testament, if you don't, that's okay. Spoiler alert. They didn't do a good job of this. In fact, instead of being salt and keeping things preserved, of drawing the best out of things, they lost their saltiness and lived just like the rest of the world around them. So Jesus is renewing that image and applying it to his followers. And remember, this statement about salt comes right after the Beatitudes, this list of upside-down priorities for the kingdom of heaven. Our world, the one we live in, values power and authority and strength. It wants to dominate. And Jesus was speaking to a context similar to our world. The Romans, who were in power at the time, valued strength and power. They wanted to dominate over their conquered subjects. And Jesus says the kingdom actually values the meek, the merciful, the pure in heart. He flips the script on what the world values. And so when he says we're supposed to be salty people, we're not supposed to be the Beatitudes apart from the world, but in the world, tied to the world. So that when we are poor in spirit, when we mourn, when we thirst for righteousness, when we are peacemakers, the world feels our presence. They feel the upside-down kingdom that we are following and embodying. We are to be the salt that affects the food and brings out the best in it. I had a teammate, his name was Ethan, and Ethan was from a small farm town in North Dakota, and like all small farm town boys from North Dakota, he never stopped running, just would never stop working, like the embodiment of the Energizer Bunny. And one day, it was in the middle of August, in the middle of one of our camp, and it was just a terribly hot day, like 100 degrees, 100% humidity, terrible day to go play football. And I think our coach felt that too, because we're out there and he's like, all right, I'm going to let you guys decide how much running you do today. Here's what we were going to do. You get to decide what we, like how much you actually run. We're like, this is awesome. We just hit the jackpot. Like, let's get back in the AC, hit the showers. Let's call it a day. This easy practice. Great. And then Ethan decided to open his big mouth. Come on, guys, we got to get better. Let's put in the hard work. Let's do the things. Let's become a better team together. Yeah, I don't forgive Ethan for that one. But we knew he was right. We knew he was trying to push us to be a better team, to do the hard things that we didn't want to do. And this is what being salt looks like. And I think it's important to see how Ethan did that. He didn't yell at us. He didn't call us names. He could have just let us go into the locker room and he ran by himself. He didn't do that, though. He inserted himself into the team. He said, hey, let's do this together. He encouraged us. To be the salt of the earth is to encourage those around us, to have a felt impact. Sometimes it will be verbal. Sometimes it's through our actions. Sometimes it's how we pray. But we have an impact on those around us. We encourage them to live into the kingdom of heaven and what Jesus is calling us to be in all areas of our life, personal, professional, family, our neighbors. Oof. Confession time. I know like two of my neighbors. And even them, I don't remember the last time I had a conversation with them. And I can give you all the excuses, but the truth is, I just haven't made the effort. I don't really even know what they think about Jesus or anything, really. So maybe the first step for me is to make time to bring them a plate of cookies and start a conversation. Maybe that's how I can be salt in my neighborhood. Because when we start to interact with people, when we start to get to know them, it opens the door for us to have compassion for them, to us to be able to share our lives with them. And I know some of you are thinking like, okay, that's sounds great for you, but that's way too outgoing. People are too people-y. But following Jesus means stepping towards others. If we want to be salt, we have to be with people. If we want to be light, we can't hide on a hill. Let's keep reading verse 14. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. Jesus is again pulling another reference from the Old Testament. The city that Jesus is talking about is Jerusalem. Jerusalem was the capital of Israel, but its significance wasn't just that it was the capital, it was where the temple was. And the temple was this place where God's presence dwelt. Jerusalem was literally the place that heaven and earth overlapped. God's presence was breaking into the world at Jerusalem. And it was supposed to be this place where people could come and meet with God. But just like how the Israelites in the Old Testament failed to live into their saltiness, the city was also corrupted and was not being a light to the world. So now Jesus is saying, the community of my followers will become the new meeting place of heaven and earth, the new place where God's presence will break into this world. When I was growing up, there was a book on my grandma's coffee table. I have tried to track this book down. I cannot remember the name of it. I can picture it in my head, but I can't find it. This book was a collection of pictures of lighthouse, of a lighthouse. There were 365 pictures of this lighthouse. Oh, goodness. One for every day of the year. And I found this book to be fascinating because it didn't matter what time of day it was. It didn't matter what season it was. It didn't matter what was happening. It could be storming. It could be a whiteout blizzard. It could be the middle of the night. You could always see the light. I was amazed at the conditions that the lighthouse endured. But it had a purpose. That lighthouse was to shine a light so that the boats out at sea knew where the coast was. It was the light that helped guide the boats who were in darkness to safety. And if that isn't the perfect picture for what we are called to be, a light that shines so that others can find their way, this world is full of ships who are in darkness and looking for a way to go. And for whatever reason, God has decided that his followers would be the way that he lights the world. I don't get it. But I wonder. And to switch stories back to cooking for a second, cooking would be so much easier without my son. There would be a lot less planning. It would be easier and better for me to just do it on my own. A lot less times of seeing, be careful, that's hot, don't touch that, be careful. But I wouldn't have that experience with my son. He wouldn't learn how to cook on his own. He wouldn't learn that he loves cooking. He would miss the beauty of food and creating something together. I wouldn't see him sitting across that table with that giant smile on his face. I want to cook with my son, not because it's easier, but because I love him. And this is what Jesus is inviting us to, inviting his followers to do, that we would be active partners in the kingdom of heaven, breaking into this world in the here and now while we wait for the not yet. Jesus is saying that my kingdom is coming through you. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light that will point the world to me. This is what he says in verse 16. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. This past week was our vacation Bible school, and it was awesome to watch happen. 170 kids came and got to experience the goodness and love of God. And there were 160 of you that gave your time, your energy, your abilities in all sorts of different ways. You helped set up a giant tent on the stage. You danced, you played games, you got crafty. You led a small group of kids and told them about Jesus. You did all of that so that 170 kids could see Jesus. And that is such a beautiful thing. I saw in real time people, you, being salt and light to the next generation. And I moved to emotion because it was so beautiful. The impact that you had on the kids in our community. You were salt and light, and they saw God because of it. And I think I need to pause. We need to pause and to clarify something before we go further. This is not how we get into the kingdom. We cannot work ourselves into the kingdom of heaven. We can't save ourselves. Rather, this is how members of the kingdom will live. Or as the Bible Project puts it, we are the blessed ones, the new Jerusalem, who will display God's kingdom to all the world. But sometimes it may feel like the church, or like the global church, is full of people who do not do a great job of this. That Christians, just like Israel in the Old Testament, are full of people who don't live into the kingdom. Where we are not very salty people, or that our lights are pretty dim. That there are many people who say they follow Jesus, but then turn around and act like he doesn't exist. And I want to be really clear. I am pointing all 10 fingers at myself first and foremost. I know myself. I know that I have my own struggles. I know that I am not always acting like salt and light. And it is important to say that we won't be perfect at this. The church is full of broken people. Broken people who are in the process of becoming more like Jesus. And sometimes we do not look very Jesus-like. We need to be transformed so that we can do good works that Jesus talks about. So how are we, the broken people, supposed to be salt and light of the world? Well, I think the thing is that we are not the source of that light. We never were. We cannot be, actually. We can't produce the light on our own. We can only reflect the light of Jesus. He's the light of the world. And that only happens when we first experience him ourselves. It takes us experiencing the kingdom of heaven to be able to share it. When I was being interviewed here, we were ordering lunch from Rafferty's, and I had never been there before, so I was like, oh, cool, what should I get? What's good? And my friend Eric told me that the baked potato calzone was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I was like, wow, that's high praise. What's it like? What does it taste like? And he's like, well, you know, it's kind of something you just got to experience. It's a little indescribable. I was like, wow, okay. Well, that sounds like if you recommend it, great. So that's what my naive self ordered. And let me tell you, he did not lie to me. He was 100% correct. It was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. An experience I had to go through to know truly what that tasted like, to really know that. And now that I have, I know that I don't ever have to experience it again. Some of you love that one, or you love it in pizza form, and I am so happy for you.
I am so happy that I'm going to let you eat all of them. The same is true with Jesus. I have to experience him to truly know what his love is like, to know what his kingdom looks like, to know how to live into that kingdom. The only way that we are transformed is to do the good works that point others. The only way that we are transformed to do the good works that point others to God, that verse 16 talks about, is by placing ourselves at the feet of Jesus. This summer, our young adults group called NXT is focusing on spiritual disciplines. And spiritual disciplines are simply a practice or an activity that allow us to experience God. It is reading the Bible, it is prayer, it's fasting. The list is extensive. Solitude, silence. Richard Foster, in his book Celebration of Discipline, writes about how the needed transformation within us to become salt and light is God's work, not ours. We cannot do it, actually. We can't just will ourselves to be salt and light, to be better. It takes God changing us so that we can do the good works. Talking about spiritual disciplines, he says, the disciplines allow us to place ourselves before God so that he can transform us. When we allow God in and we surrender our will, our actions, our thoughts, our affections, our beliefs, he starts transforming us. We experience his love and his goodness. We experience the kingdom. And then we start impacting the world around us. We preserve it. We season it. We become the place where heaven and earth meet. We partner with God to bring his kingdom into this world. So as we end today, I want to give you a simple spiritual discipline that you can practice this week. I didn't have time to get it added, or I didn't get it added to your programs, but it's here on the slide. You can write this down or take a picture, whatever is helpful. If you have a rhythm of spending time with God in your week, maybe this can be a part of it. If you don't have a rhythm of spending time with God, maybe this can be a way to start. It's a four-step process. The first is just find a quiet space. I know for some of you in the chaos of life, that's a really hard thing to do. Even if it's just for a couple minutes, find a quiet moment. Step two is to begin with a centering prayer, to turn our attention and our focus to God. Start by taking a few slow breaths and praying that God would be with you. On the inhale, God, you are here. On the exhale, I am with you. And then turn to step three. Ask God, where have you been close to me today or this week, even if I didn't notice it? Let a moment come to your mind. Picture God there with you. What is he doing? What is he saying? How is he present with you? And then step four is to close with gratitude. Thank you for being with me. This practice helps us become more aware of God's presence around us. What is he doing in my life? What is he doing in others' lives? It helps us take a step into opening ourselves to him so that he can transform us. It doesn't have to be long. Just start with a couple minutes and let it naturally develop from there. Do this three times this week, four times, just a couple. Allow God to enter into your world, into your life, and transform you. We're going to end by taking a few moments to do this together. Would you pray with me? God, you are here. We are with you.
God, where have you been active? Where have you been present in our lives, even when we didn't notice you?
God, thank you for being with us. Spirit, as we open ourselves to you, as we come to meet with you, as we place ourselves in your presence, would we experience your goodness and your love? And would it transform us so that we can go and do good works that point others to you? Would we be salt and light, not for our sake, but for you, so that others can experience your goodness and your love. Be with us now.